from the racetracks around Australia, here's Inside Motorsport.
Hello, I'm Craig Revell.
I'm Colin Ford.
And I'm Peter Norton. Welcome to this week's episode of Inside Motorsport.
Tommy Mäkinen announced during the week that he was joining the Subaru team for 2002. Unfortunately, his Rally of Corsica didn't start the way he had hoped, crashing out in day number one. Greg Strange has the details.
This was a frightening accident, and it could have been even worse. Mäkinen's car came to a halt upside down and just leaning over the edge of a deep ravine. There was also a small fire. A British TV crew from Chrysalis Television was amongst the early arrivals on the scene and helped with the initial rescue efforts, as did rally photographers. Manasman Markey was airlifted to hospital in Ajaccio. Now the decision has been taken to fly him to Marseille for further tests, accompanied by the Mitsubishi team doctor, Dr. Paul Trafford. There are also suggestions, not confirmed by the team, that Manasman Markey may need to undergo surgery. Nicky Grist, who survived a similar accident with Colin McRae here last year, has voiced his concern about asphalt rallying. He says nowadays it's become flat-out racing, and he's calling on the sport to come up with safer alternatives. Rallying is an incredibly close community with relationships which transcend mere team and driver rivalry, and there's intense concern about Manasman Markey, just as there was for McRae last year. In the circumstances, the leaderboard seems rather spurious, but Jesus Pures leads for Citroën by 10.5 seconds from Peugeot's Gilles Panizzi, and amongst the championship contenders, Carlos Sainz and now, of course, Tommy Mäkinen are both out. Colin McRae is 12th and Richard Burns 14th.
Of course, day two action is underway at the moment. We go back to Greg Strange at Rally Control.
Jesus Pures will go into the final five stages of this extraordinary rally with a 23.5-second lead over Peugeot's Gilles Panizzi and a 49.9-second lead over third-place Didier Auriol. And unless he makes a mistake or suffers mechanical breakdown, he should easily win his first ever World Rally Championship event. Citroën don't score in the Manufacturers' Championship this year, so Peugeot's 2 and 3 would then give them the maximum 16 points, enabling Peugeot to mount a late-season challenge to Ford in Rally Australia and Rally Great Britain. Panizzi and Auriol know the score. They have their orders. It's between these three men. The rest are out of it unless something dramatic happens. Richard Burns will get into the points if he can improve on his seventh place, but Colin McRae, 8 minutes 39 seconds behind, will score no points here unless something truly remarkable happens.
This weekend, the Classic Adelaide Rally was being run down in Adelaide, and with us now is our correspondent, David Langfield. David, how was it down there for the Rally of Adelaide?
Fantastic. We had Thursday was slightly overcast, sort of a hint of rain, but the last 3 days have been absolutely glorious. Fantastic conditions for rallying, both for competitors and for spectators. And in a knockout win, we've had 1998 winner Andrew Cavalli and Michael Dale in a Ford Escort RS1600 repeating their victory and being the first ever winners to win two Classic Adelaides today.
Oh, well, that's good for them, and obviously something that means that somebody's got to go up there and try and beat them.
Well, that's it. I actually spoke to Andrew after the event, and in fact, they won in 98. They crashed out whilst leading in 99, which is the year that Rick Bates took out the event. Last year, they ended up finishing second to John Spencer in the Datsun, but unfortunately they had a body shell of their Escort protested. That was the eligibility of the vehicle was disqualified sometime after the event, and of course they had some unfinished business to come back here and put things right. But Andrew's quite wrapped in the event, but he still rates 1998 as the one that he actually rates as the best win, purely because of the time involved. They built the car in about 7 weeks or something from his grandfather's, I think it was his grandfather's Escort, built the thing up as a replica and hadn't tried the thing and came out here and won it. So they've done it again, and an excellent effort by the guys.
Mm. And if he's the winner, who came second?
Well, second place, and it was a real, in the end, a Ford versus Holden. A good old Aussie Ford versus Holden again. But we had actually had a 1970 Ford Capri Piranha, that's the big V8 monster, of David McDonough and Lynn Wilson. They came second, exactly 2 minutes behind the leaders, Cavalli and Dale. Cavalli and Dale actually opened a massive lead on day one. They won all five special stages, opened a pretty handy, about a one-minute lead, and then backed it off, played conservative, as Andrew said to me after the event. No point in going out and winning by a massive margin. He said the previous years have told him he's got to get the thing home. Third place, and by one second, was the 1965 Lotus Elan of Peter Landon and Warwick Thomas. They actually also took out the historic, post-historic category of the event. It's split into a number of positions, categories, which we at this stage haven't got the full results for. But those were winners of Post Historic and also managing to sneak past John Beasley and in his XU1 Tirana. So that was the Ford versus Holden battle that's raged. In amongst all that, we've had three Porsche 911s, Jeff Beaumont, Mark Forgey and Jeff Olley, joining in with the Ford versus Holden battle, but they fell by the wayside throughout the event. The Porsche of Forgey last night apparently was just blowing a lot of smoke at the port, according to one of the checkpoints. So unfortunately, the Porsche is not lasting a distance there, so it was the Fords that were the ones to win.
Obviously, I need to talk to Rick Bates, who's run a Porsche in the Alaska to South America rally, about how to get them to last longer.
Well, that's it. Actually, I think that I'm pretty sure that car is actually in the event. I think it's a fellow called Nick Britton from that owns that car. I think it was entered again this year because it looked the familiar colours there. Several interesting things that actually happened over the weekend. We had a marriage proposal yesterday. The Gorge Road stage, which was the last stage of the day. Whilst coming to the checkpoint, the parade cars, which are the non-competitive cars, we had one of the old Mercedes that I spoke about last week, the historic Mercedes Roadsters that were out from Germany. Their crew was carrying a large banner which said, bearing the words, "Amanda, will you marry me?" One of the stage officials was proposing to his girlfriend, who was also working on the stage, and I've actually seen some digital photographs that one of the media guys had in there. Quite amusing, this car pulling in there with a big banner on it, and the look on her face was just priceless. But of course, she accepted.
Well, these are the sort of things that do happen in motorsport. Any other interesting happenings out there on the Classic Adelaide Rally?
It's fairly high attrition, to be honest. Number of the stages were reversed to last year, so they were coming down the stages they'd come up in previous years, and I think that took its toll. Guys were running out of brakes because you're going downhill and things are working a lot harder. There's a lot more crashes. I think I witnessed about three or four myself. Fortunately, no crews have been hurt, and a lot of the cars actually were paired overnight and managed to get back into running the next day, obviously well down the order. But it was a high attrition event for particularly mechanical and the accident damage. That really is indicative of the fact that there was a real battle for the minor placings here. Cavalli, as I said, cleared out early and disappeared, but as he knows too well, he's got to finish the event. But this battle for second and the minor placings was really intense, and I think that was borne out by a lot of the accidents. Guys are pushing very, very hard on this event.
Yep. Now, in terms of the organisation of the event, compared to another event that was run over there earlier in the year, full marks to the rally organisers?
Yeah, the organisers, obviously, in fairness to the other one, a start-up event, and we know they'll get word perfect next year. This event's now in its fifth year. It's highly successful. The public love it. We've had several street party things, activities going on. The Goodger Street and the Chinatown side of Adelaide, some fantastic restaurants and places down there. The car's out on display on Friday night. This afternoon we're finishing Rundle Street, which is up the eastern side of the city, for those of you who have not been here. It's the cafe strip. There's cars all parked out here, and people now have had the champagne spray. It's probably about up past five by now here, and people are strolling up and down looking for somewhere to eat, and there's people out enjoying the afternoon. This is a fantastic day in Adelaide, and the organisers have done very well. The media people, I'll say, were getting information to us. Fantastic. No dramas at all there. Very, very easy to get updates and what have you in there. So, all in all, Adelaide's put on a great event, and, like we do, we know motorsport.
Mm. Well, David, thanks for your report on the Classic Adelaide Rally finishing up today, and no doubt there'll be full results out on their website. I'm sure they've probably got one, knowing the people who are well organised as they are.
Yes, definitely. They're so very, very organised, and if any developments come on, like protests, etc., we'll keep you up to date in future issues of the show.
Thanks very much, Dave Langfield.
Thanks, Colin.
Today at Winton, the first round of the new Super Tour Future Tour races for 2001-2002, and winner in the Future Tour class in both races was Ray Sidebottom in the APS Racing Commodore. Ray, a good outing for you, first time out this year.
Yes, no, very good. We're pretty pleased with it, actually, with a brand new car.
And everything went as you hoped with it?
Yeah, we had a few problems on Friday in practice, but apart from that, the car went pretty well. The crew, we didn't have to make any changes at all to the car, really. So it went pretty well.
This year there seems to be a fairly strong group of competitors in the Future Tour category. So you finished off last year fairly high up. The pack this year is starting off that way as well.
Yeah, well, we've built a brand new car for the category, and we're racing the car that was only four meetings old last year. It's year two, and we had there's a field of 14 cars. There's another four to come, but they got held up due to unforeseen circumstances. And the next race meeting at Calder on the 24th of November, we look like having at least 20 future tourers there.
So it's actually getting quite a good sized grid.
Yeah, no, it's working out pretty good now. It's taking a little while, but you know, the class is starting to kick along, and the crowds here at Winton today were fantastic.
Today, by look at things in the two races, you had different people pushing you. It looks like in race one you had Jeff Parker giving you a push along, and in race two it was James Brock.
Yeah, well, Brocky had a bit of bad luck at the start in the first one, and they put him back in the field a bit, but Jeff Parker was actually leasing one of our older cars, and he went quite well, actually, and he was quite well up the field in the first one.
Mm. Given the short time frame between the Toka Run Championship sort of falling over and the Power Tour people picking up, must have thrown a bit of confusion into plans for this year.
This year sort of we're racing. Power Tour has picked us up for this race meeting and for Calder, and then by the time Calder's finished, we'll have it all sorted out for next year for the program, and we'll probably be racing an 8-race program with the Power Tour at this stage.
Mm. Well, it'll be good to see you back out there, because I know that it's a series that's been a lot of fun for yourself and the team.
Oh, no, we're really pleased with it, and it's a category that it's got a lot of merit for a lot of people, and you know, it's a category that's affordable for a lot of people that have been in this sort of sport for a long time.
Mm. Well, Ray, yeah, congratulations on your two class wins today, and we'll no doubt try and chase you up at Calder and see how you go there.
That'd be terrific. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Today, the Power Tour moved down to Winton, and now with a report on today's proceedings down there, what I believe was a cracker of a meeting, Gary O'Brien.
Yes, it certainly was. Actually, the trucks were wrapped up today, the championship, with Inky Tullock taking his second crown. He did a good result this weekend to do it, and he did it in fine style, taking all three races. However, second position is still up for grabs, although Glenn Dobson has probably push himself a little further towards taking that second spot, but with Calder coming up in 5 weeks, anything's likely.
Mm. Now, Inky, of course, he's been a man that's been very, very hard to beat this entire season. Everybody's been chasing Inky.
It sure has. He didn't start the championship off too well at Malala, but since then he seems to be on the ball, and he has got the most advanced new truck out there at this stage. The other new truck that's running the Rodney Quick Shell Volvos had nothing but gremlins for most of the year, and this weekend wasn't any exception. They were about to pack up and go home last night because they'd blown the last of their turbos, but an overnight freight run on the train, and they were back up and running today. Got through a couple of the races, but not without problems and not going all that fast.
Mm. Well, hopefully somebody will find a way to get past Inky in that freight liner sooner or later.
Well, it'll have to be the Volvo, I think, at this stage, although we have heard on the grapevine there's a couple of new trucks coming next year, so there's a few more big trucks coming in. That's what the category desperately needs, and it couldn't happen at a better time.
Well, of course, you've got other categories running there as well today, and I believe that the business was fast and furious for them as well.
Well, it was. We had VA Stock Cars, the formerly NASCAR-type cars, and Andrew Medecki has pushed himself further in front with that. He had two wins from three starts, had a bit of an off in the second race, and gave that one to the new kid on the block, as it were, Rusty French. And most motor racing followers will know Rusty French has dabbled in just about everything, and his latest venture is V8 Stock Cars. He had a reasonable weekend, but second overall, I think you'll find, went to Mark Harrison, the very much underfunded Pontiac Grand Prix driver, who performed well. He had 2 seconds and a little bit of an off in one race and finished midfield, but I think it was enough to get in the second podium spot at least.
Mm. And, of course, this weekend saw that the first outing for the Super Tourers and the Future Tourers on the Power Tour grids.
And what a funny turn-up it turned out to be, because this particular group had the biggest entry they've ever had, even under the Toka banner. So there was 7 Super Tourers and 12 Future Tourers. So it was certainly big in numbers as far as the new V8s went. And Peter Hills had 2 wins this weekend to lead the series. Well, if they have a series, he'll be leading it. But he's taking the points today. And Luke Searle had a great run in the first race in the back of the grid to finish on the podium, and he's come to finish second in the second race. Jamie Miller looked like having third wrapped up in the second race, but fell to the Alpha driver. His name just escapes me. Right.
David Auger.
David Auger, that's right. Yeah, David Auger had a result there. Sam Dale finished fifth. Best of the Future Tourers was Ray Sidebottom in his brand new APS Racing Commodore, a VX, and it's a beautiful looking machine. He's actually raised the standard of Future Tourers by building this car because everyone's now going to strive to match it.
Mm. So definitely some good racing. Of course, Commodore Cup as well was one of the out there today.
Commodore Cup, and this usually is a fairly close category, but Jeff Emery just stole a march on the first lap at both races and just wasn't seen after that. I'm not sure what happened to Neville Haley. He was second qualifier, but he started from pit lane in race one and from the back of the grid in the second race, so he was never really in calculations. And even the Strathfield car, Radio's cars, were only finishing third and fourth. Sort of. That's how dominant Emery was this weekend.
Mm. And, of course, there's a full program there, of course, of the light trucks and...
Well, we have what they call the light truck championship. Graham Spencer took all the honours there today. There was only a couple of them, and unfortunately, a couple of them had problems as well. And then the co-drivers, the Siders brothers, fought it out yesterday, and they were up the pointy end this today with Bill Siders ending up with two wins. We've had HQ Holdens. Guy Thompson won every event. And over and over, there was a good crowd here to see them as well, and probably up around to 10,000, I would imagine.
Mm. But the thing is, a good day's mixed variety of racing with different categories and different types of racing going on, which no doubt means that there's something different on track all the time.
And there was 19 events, and almost as each one was still getting off the track, the next one was rolling out on the track. They were just throwing them one after the other. You never got a respite from it all.
Mm.
And the thing is that the guy who's put all this together, Nick Ebbick, and his offsider, Paul French, are looking at down the pit paddock and saying, geez, we've got a race meeting now. We've got all the categories, and they're even negotiating to increase it, to make it a broader spectacle for 2002.
Mm. Well, obviously, a great day's racing there at Winton, and one that everybody's sort of now looking forward to the next round at Calder.
I think so. I think that'll be a big event because, you know, it's a bit closer to Melbourne, so therefore, you know, the ones that don't like travelling so much won't be minding so much to have to go to Calder as opposed to coming up here to Winton, which is, you know, a good 2 hours and a bit run.
Yeah. Well, Gary, thanks for the report today on happenings down there at Winton. And,
that's my pleasure.
No worries. We'll catch you around.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Well, moving to touring car racing elsewhere in the world, and this weekend sees the final round of the European Touring Car Championship, and in a breathtaking qualifying session, Alfa Romeo guest star Ivan Muller has celebrated his first appearance in the FIA European Super Touring Championship by claiming pole position with only 3 minutes left in the session. The Frenchman clocked a time of 1 minute 43.818 seconds that ousted his Nord Auto teammate Nicola Larini from the first spot of the starting grid. Muller also ended a three-pole position streak by Honda and Gabriele Tarquini. The last poleman for Alfa Romeo was Fabrizio Giovinazzi back in the Budapest round of the championship. But for most of the day's session, the Alfa Romeo drivers were on top. Giovinazzi was the first to claim provisional pole position on his very first lap with a time of 1 minute 44.961 seconds. The actual championship leader managed to improve his own time halfway through the session with a 1 minute 44.420. Only 1 minute later was Tarquini's time to steal the provisional pole position from Giovinazzi, improving to 1 minute 44.240. With 7 minutes left, Giovinazzi broke first the 1 minute 44 barrier. He clocked a time of 1 minute 43.946 to reclaim the provisional pole position. Giovinazzi's time was then outpaced by Larini's 1 minute 43.941, only a mere 0.005 of a second dividing the two Alfa Romeo drivers. Larini's dream to be the pole sitter lasted a few seconds before being broken by Muller's perfect lap. As the session was about to expire, Tarquini managed to improve again, going down to 1 minute 43.907. That was good enough for the second of the front row positions. In the end, the first four drivers in the qualifying session, Muller, Tarquini, Larini and Giovinazzi, were covered by only 0.128 seconds. Today, Sunday, in the final two races of the season, Giovinazzi will be trying to defend his 16-point lead in the championship from Tarquini and Larini, who are sharing second position in the classification. Alfa Romeos and Hondas dominated the qualifying, monopolising the top seven positions on the grid for today's first race. Nord Auto Felipe Massa set the fifth time, 0.45 a second behind the pole, just ahead of Just Motorsports guest driver James Thompson and Fabrice Walfish. Best of the rest was Roberto Colgaccio in his AGS Motorsport Audi R4 Quattro, who beat Nissan Primera's Matt Neal, who spun off and crashed into the barrier early in the session, and Carl Rosenblad and the Volvo S40 of Jens Edman. Sandro Sardelli set the 12th time at the wheel of his Pro Motorsport Nissan Primera to qualify best of the amateur drivers. His rival in the trophy title fight, Gianluca Di Lorenzi, will line up 15th on the grid. Sergio Sabato did not show up at all during qualifying, his racing box Audi A4 Quattro suffering from engine problems. So that's the final round of the European Touring Car Championship taking place over there in Europe today. And it'll be going to be interesting to see how that one ends up, because, as I say, it's very, very tight at the top end of that championship. Also, looking at European Tourers and in the British Touring Car Championship, it looks like Honda may make a return to the British Touring Car Championship in 2002 with possibly a two-car assault using its Honda Civic Type R. The Japanese manufacturer, which ended its five-year stint in the BTCC last year, has yet to officially confirm its involvement, which is said to be reliant on a television deal being in place to replace the one that was previously held with the BBC. British Touring Car Championship insiders say that the TV deal has been inked and will be announced later this week. Former British Touring Car Championship independents Arena Motorsport has won the deal to run the attack, according to sources. The team ran Russell Spence and Will Hoy in a Renault Laguna in 1999 and have run Stefan Johansson's privateer Audi R8 effort in the American Le Mans Series and Le Mans 24 Hours race this year. Arena has beaten Italian firm JAS Motorsport to the Honda deal. JAS, which runs Honda's European Touring Car Championship Assault, has already built a Group N version of the Honda Civic Type R, which they are looking at adapting to Super Production or BTCC or Super 2000 Touring Class regulations. When Honda finally announces their involvement, they'll become the fifth manufacturer to sign up to the new-look BTCC rules, along with Vauxhall, Peugeot, MG and Proton. Proton has yet to officially confirm its plans, while Peugeot is still weighing a final budget decision from France. Well, next weekend sees a lot of things going on, but happening elsewhere in the world, we've had things happening in the world of kart.
This was a frightening accident, and it could have been even worse. Mackinnon's car came to a halt upside.
Well, that obviously wasn't the correct one. No doubt the old story, when we're trying to find a story, we find the place where it is, and that wasn't it. Let's just try and see if we can get this to go right this time.
To motor running now in Spain's Jesús Pura.
Now, obviously, the person who's got that tape set up for us didn't set up the right one, so we'll have to go on with some other news. And looking at British Formula 3, and in the British Formula 3 Championship news, the word that the Jaguar squad has been sold and has been bought by a consortium. And the new consortium plans to run a four-car squad in British Formula 3 next season. The team is headed by veteran engineer Rolly Vincenzi and will run from his Norfolk workshops, which previously housed his P1 Motorsport team in the early 90s. He is joined in the venture by Van Diemen's commercial director, John Uprichard, and Formula Ford co-owner, John Sweeney. Jaguar Racing has chosen to offload its Formula 3 team to concentrate on turning around its flagging Formula 1 fortunes. Formula 3 has played a key role in the development of young drivers, and a crucial part of this deal with the consortium was to ensure that the young driver development program remained in place, said Jaguar Racing boss Niki Lauda. We have not at this stage decided on the future of James Courtney or Andre Lotterer. Discussions with both men are ongoing, and again, we want to ensure an outcome with their best interests in mind. The new team plans to run a brace of cars in both the championship and scholarship classes next season. We want to do it properly, and Formula 3 is the place to be at the moment, said Uprichard. In terms of drivers, it depends a lot on the budgets available. Formula Ford Z-Tech frontrunner Adam Carroll has been confirmed in the team's scholarship class lineup. James Courtney is not thought likely to drive for the squad, so James Courtney, from going where he's looking in a fairly secure position with the Jaguar Formula 3 team and the progression that he could possibly make there, now looking uncertain with the news that Jaguar has dropped that particular class of racing and their arrangements for that championship. So we'll have to see how things unfold for him. Who knows, he might get picked up by one of the other teams, or he might get himself an offer for the Formula 3000 championship because he did fairly well there. And, of course, news this week that very likely that VW will be linked with the Jordan team. And if that happens, another Formula One engine manufacturer will be most welcome in there. And, of course, Jordan some time has been looking at the situation with the Honda engines and where they're going to end up with them for next season. So things look interesting there. Of course, Jordan has announced in recent weeks the fact that they've changed their driver lineup, with Giancarlo Fisichella joining their driving lineup, as well as the fast-rising former three-star Takuma Sato, who's won the British Formula 3 Championship this year. No doubt that would have looked good for them if they had been retaining the Honda engines, and that was probably what part of their bid to try and retain Honda by announcing Sato. But as it was, Sato has been signed up there, Fisichella as well, and of course that's left John Lacey out in the cold. And so the Japanese Grand Prix last weekend became the final race for John Lacey, and he's now potentially looking at a number of things. Apparently he was considering kart for a while, but decided that that was a bit too dangerous, and he's now looking at other areas of motorsport where he might become involved. And it has been suggested that he may join up with one of the teams in the American Le Mans series and work things out as things go there. So hopefully we'll see John Lacey around the track in the future, and I'd say possibly that one of those things is that the American Le Mans series could be one of those places that suits him well. Also in American Le Mans series news, there's news that David Bradham has set to sign a three-year deal to stay with Pinoz in the American Le Mans series, and he hopes to be joined by the current partner Jan Magnussen. So obviously, if David Brabham stays there, that'll be good for the Pinoz team. And Don Pinoz is looking at trying to improve his team's situation. They've won a couple of races this year, which was with their older car, but trying to improve things for the next season to beat the all-conquering Audis, which have been very much dominating the American Le Mans series and also at Le Mans itself. And I'd say it's going to be interesting to see how things go there, with the news that General Motors is planning to run four cars at Le Mans next year, two new Cadillac Northstar LMPs, which will commemorate the Mark's 100th anniversary, and two upgraded Chevrolet Corvette C5Rs in the GDS category. So that's going to be good for General Motors fans.
The Fireworks King was back in action once again, and Tony Southwell joins us on the line now. Wynn and the NASCARs was once again a fantastic combination, and you fellows put on a fantastic show, and yourself had quite a consistent day out there in the big V8s.
Yeah, we had a fourth, a second and a third, and we ended up second outright on the day.
It was an interesting event for you all, because you had quite a mix of drivers in there, with Rusty French coming back, and of course Andrew Medici, who's certainly been the man that you've been trying to catch all year, also having their moments in the sun.
Yeah, we only managed to beat Andrew once so far this year, and we couldn't manage to do it again. We managed to beat him once today, but yeah, he's pretty good and got a lot of experience, and having Rusty along was really good too, having some more guys with that experience coming along with the road course stuff.
This program just keeps getting stronger and stronger for the Power Tour, with the inclusion now of the Future and Super Tour is on the card.
Yeah, it's looking really good. I think they had something like 8 or 9 different categories today racing, and the Power Tour, it's really becoming a force to reckon with in motorsport in Australia. They put on a great show.
I would imagine that now you just need the media to come online and certainly promote the series as it's being presented in a more professional fashion.
I think they're going to have no choice soon, the way it's going with the amount of cars and what's turning up. I think that the media is going to have to start following it.
You head down to Melbourne now, and this will be obviously the best chance to see how the Power Tour is going for crowd-wise, because with the Super Trucks, the V8 stock cars, which of course are the NASCAR derivative, and also now the Future and Super Tourers on the card as all headlining acts, it is going to be something that the crowd will come out and watch.
Yeah, I think they're going to have a big crowd down there, and I'd say we'll probably have 20-odd NASCARs running at Calder. There's a lot of guys coming on board, and a few guys that couldn't make it this weekend, and I think that because we've run there before on the flat track, well, I think we'll put on a great show.
Are you using the full-length circuit, or will you be using slightly shorter circuit?
No, we're going to be using the full national circuit. We're going to be using the long track.
So that is going to make for plenty of opportunities for passing, even though the binders on the big cars do have to work overtime.
The brakes is a bit of an issue sometimes with these cars. Most of us, we've got really good calipers on the cars now.
We're just limited by our rotor size, but the calipers are pretty much what the V8 supercars are running, and but just the rotor size is what sort of inhibits us a bit.
And, of course, this year has been a bit of a watershed because you've gone from the NASCAR rules and sanctioning body to the CAM sanctioning body. And, of course, CAMs normally like you to have doors and not just climb in through the window.
Yeah, CAMs have been really helpful. They helped us in the very first place. So, like 11 years ago, they come on board when we ran NASCAR originally. And this time they've been really good too. They've wanted to change a few things that they have on their cars, but they've been there to help all the way.
And, of course, the Power Tour, as we mentioned, getting bigger and better. It's a pleasure to catch up with you once again, and we look forward to speaking to you after that round down there at Calder Park.
And hopefully I've won the championship.
It will be a goal you'll be shooting for, and, of course, you have got a lot of good local sponsors as well as the Fireworks King.
Yeah, we get a lot of help from a lot of people, and it is really good. So, yeah, we're doing our best.
Gary Holt joins us on the line now, and up at Eastern Creek International Kartway was a very new meeting to the karting scene, and, well, one that everyone had been looking forward to, the APS Pro Nationals. And, Gary, you've gone all out with this event to really make it the first time out, one of the most impressive events on the Australian karting calendar.
Well, it certainly was. You know, we've just finished now the event. The last race was the international race. And fortunately, we've got it all on film. It was the most exciting race of karting and any form of motor racing has one ever witnessed. And it was absolutely brilliant.
You've got quite a few responsibilities these days, looking after the karts, which have certainly been a very busy enterprise for you, as well as Wakefield Park. And obviously having the karting facility at Eastern Creek there, if people haven't been up there, it's one you certainly have to go up there and have a look at, because not only can you have a hire kart program running 7 days a week, but you can hold an international event at the same time.
Well, that's exactly what was happening today. Yes, no, today the karting track here is open 7 days a week from 9 o'clock in the morning and through until 11 o'clock at night, and it's mainly designed for corporate entertainment and also what's called arrive and drive, and that's where you can come along and buy an admission ticket and drive the karts from the age of seven upwards.
Of course, APS is a regional petrol station chain that has got right behind karting and really gone together with yourself to put on the APS Nationals.
The APS Nationals, there was five events today which were running for Australian titles. And there was five national titles up for grabs today, and there was also what was called the Pro Clubman, which is the most popular class of form of racing in karting, and also the international. And it was the international that brought the house down. It was an absolutely fantastic event, which Andrew Tomlinson, won, and the lead changed more than 10 times, you know, in the last 10 laps. It was quite incredible.
Of course, you also had a night set of racing as well under the floodlights at Eastern Creek for some of the qualifying heats.
Yes, last night we saw a couple of the pre-finals and also some of the heats, and there was a lot of sparks flying off and it was glowing in the night, and it was absolutely fantastic as well.
Television coverage, you mentioned you do have it on film, and I believe SBS Speed Week will be showing some of the highlights.
Well, Speed Week are carrying out a two-hour coverage over 2 weeks, and that coverage should go to air within the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Mm. And, of course, your other little project you have down the road a ways is, of course, at Wakefield Park, and plenty of talk there about the expansion program that you are looking into at the moment.
Well, the only project I have at the moment is legal action against my former partners with Wakefield Park. So I'm no longer involved, and that's a matter for the courts.
Okay, then. Well, we better not say too much about that at this stage, then. But, Gary, congratulations on the APS Nationals. Of course, a very exciting development in kart racing, and one that's had a tremendous support right across the board in the karting world.
Well, look, it's what karting needed. We held the Oceania here about 2 or 3 years ago, and it was the most successful event to be staged in Australia. And we were able to get it on Network 10, which was the first time a karting event's ever been held on national television. But unfortunately, you know, the bureaucrats got in there with the Australian Karting Association, and finally Sean Henshelwood and myself from Kart Oz magazine decided to promote our own event, and this is the first of many events to come.
And hopefully, well, we are going to see the sort of racing that was put on right throughout the whole weekend.
Oh, look, without a doubt, it's the spectators, it's the, you know, competitors that, that put on this event. You know, they're the ones who create the exciting racing. And, you know, we had $5,000 up for grabs for the international class and some of the other classes, which was the Rotax Max Light and Heavy. There was, for first place in both of those classes, was a fully paid for trip to Malaysia for the World Championships in about 6 weeks' time.
And I guess, Gary, we might just get you to quickly run through the a few of the winners there from this weekend's APS Nationals.
Well, first of all, we had Damien Meyer, who won the Rotax Max Heavy. Damien was a pole sitter, and he did an excellent job. Then we had Andrew Tomlinson, who won the international class, and Andrew went back to sixth place in the final, and then he drove up through the pack, and as I said, it was an absolutely brilliant race. And in the pro clubman, we had Joshua Pontello, and that was another exciting race. It was an absolute brilliant race in the pro clubman. And in the junior piston port, we had young Simo, and Michael Simpson, Simmons, I should say, he drove a fantastic race as well.
It sounds like it was fantastic racing. And Gary, we look forward to hearing about more great karting action up there at the Eastern Creek International Kartway. And, of course, you have got a website there where people can keep right up to date with what's going on.
Exactly, yes. It's naturally www.easterncreekkarts, one word, with an S on the end of karts.com.au.
And, of course, we can see you out there in the V8 supercar ranks. And are you planning to go down to Sandown for the final race of the season?
No, no, we're planning to build a new car for next year, and we've retired this car, and we're going to start fresh for next year.
Yeah. Focusing predominantly on the Konica series?
Yes, on the, in the Konica series, and then, of course, you know, the big one at the end of the year with Bathurst.
Mm. Well, Gary, thanks very much for your time this afternoon, and we wish you all the best for the projects you've got coming up in the near future.
Thank you very much, Brad.
And joining us on the line now, we
Hello.
Do go directly to Damien Meyer, the winner today in the Rotax Max class. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And for yourself, what's your background? I've obviously been in karting for a little while now.
Yeah, it's been a few years under the belt. I've been doing it for about 15 years now. Yeah, it's had a bit of success this year, with the win today and the state title this year. It's been not a bad year, and not a bad way, to actually cap the year off, so quite happy with it.
How have you progressed through the ranks? Obviously now you're getting into the more towards CIK type classes.
Yep.
But what about, where did you start?
Well, I started, well, basically at the lowest level, which in those times was called rookies, basically at age 9. And said basically progressed up through the ranks, and well, I've done CIK racing as well, but basically, yeah, said gone to junior clubman where I won the national championship, and then yeah, progressed through to seniors and a few state titles, and well, another nationals now. I'm pretty happy with it.
It has been an interesting race meeting set up by Gary and Sean Henschelwood from Kartos Magazine, the APS Nationals, the night component. How did you enjoy racing under the floodlights?
It made it very, very exciting. As I said, it's a new element, and when the spectators, they obviously loved it, because as I said, we're very low to the ground. There's sparks going everywhere. Obviously, braking markers change because obviously the track is damp. Obviously, the cars slide around a little bit more, so there's a little bit more action for the spectators to see. So, as an overall component for a spectator perspective, I thought it was really, really good.
Mm.
In terms of as a driver, yeah, I really enjoyed it as well. I mean, you got to take every challenge that comes, and well, basically that was just another challenge.
What about for yourself? Where do you see your career progressing to?
Well, hopefully next year, that 90% confirmed for Formula Ford. So I'll be leaving karts, but I might do the odd meeting here and there. But at this stage, yeah, I'll be moving to Formula Ford. Looking for a few sponsors though, but. Yeah, so at this stage it will be Formula Ford.
And what about career goals? Is it open wheelers? Do you want to race tin tops? What sort of avenue do you want to pursue that way?
Well, as I said, I want to start off in open wheelers. Obviously, a lot of my predecessors and people I have raced with are, well, all around the world now, and in tin tops as well. So
look, I'm quite open at the moment. I mean, I love Australia, so I mean, I'd look at hopefully a career here, maybe eventually in V8. Yeah.
All right. Now I know that Gary was trying to get Andrew Tomlinson. I don't suppose he is around you at the moment.
I haven't seen him, but just one moment. I'll see if I can locate him for you.
All right. Nothing like live radio here, Triple SFM Inside Motorsport, and Damien Meyer, winner this weekend of the APS Nationals, picking up an Australian title in the Rotax Max class. And we're hoping that we might be able to have a quick word with Andrew Tomlinson, who won the international class over the weekend. And, of course, so many competitors at this event, Damien. It did make for a very exciting meeting. And, of course, in your class, you had people like... of course, Winterbottom and all the fellas coming back from the Ford series.
Sorry?
And I was just mentioning you had the Ford Rotax series, which was running just last weekend, which you had all these people converging on your doorstep as well.
That's right, yeah. As I said, it made it very, very difficult. But as I said, I mean, all these guys have been around for a long time now, and, I mean, we all know what we're doing. And, you know, it makes life, interesting, but it's all tough competition.
Mm. Well,
that's what makes it healthy.
Yes. We appreciate your time tonight, Damien, and look forward to seeing you in the Formula Ford ranks. Now, you're racing state-level Formula Ford or going national?
Initially we'll start off with a year in state level with selected national rounds and see how we go from there.
Well, Damien, thanks very much for your time tonight.
Thank you very much.
Welcome to the Honda Champ Car Update. I'm Jim Murphy. Join me now as we make a visit to the fast-paced world of the kart series.
The Honda Grand Prix of Monterey was one of the most bizarre races in recent memory. However, when the dust settled, it was Max Pappas coming out on top as the winner over Mamo Gidley and Gilles Deferrin. The weekend, however, got off to a sadder start, as Honda Performance Development General Manager Robert Clark explains.
On Friday, we announced to the world that we've made a decision to leave the kart series at the end of the 2002 race season.
What were the reasons behind that decision?
Well, there are multiple. A key reason is the fact that Honda has basically lost trust in the kart series or the kart management and their ability to professionally run the series and to police and regulate their rule book.
Was it a difficult decision to arrive at?
Very difficult decision. It's Honda, when we entered the series made the announcement actually back in 1993 in January at the Detroit Auto Show, that was a major commitment to Honda, and it took a long, even though we made the announcement in 93, it was actually several years before that we actually began the research and consideration of entering the series. And for any manufacturer to commit to compete at the level that we're competing at here in the kart series, and considering the enormous amount of funds and human resources and effort that goes into a program, you can't go into it without a very serious commitment, a long-term commitment. And to make the decision to leave after we've achieved such good success in the program over the past 8 years, it's a huge disappointment.
How much of a factor in the decision was the announcement by CART to go to the 3.5 normally aspirated engine formula beginning in 2003?
That was definitely a decision, part of the decision, because it... in fact, it was impossible for us to have an engine ready of that for that formula in 2003. It takes Honda basically 2 years to design, develop, test, and produce and have ready for racing any new engine. And with that announcement and basically giving the manufacturers roughly 13 months to develop an engine, it's physically impossible for Honda to do that. Now, it might be possible for some other manufacturer, but Honda's style and our system and procedure for developing a racing engine would not allow it.
Racing has always been a very important part of Honda's heritage, and particularly for HPD. What's the future hold? Where is Honda going to
take care of that that need for racing and its culture?
Well, right now, there's no plan to enter any other racing series. The future of HPD is a huge concern of mine personally, because I'm responsible directly for HPD. And we will be looking at options that are available to HPD in the coming weeks and months, both in racing and non-racing.
Well, for everybody involved in the CART series, it's been around the last 5 or 6 years, and we just want to say thank you. We have enjoyed your presence. You guys have done a lot for the sport, and you will be missed.
Well, thank you. We've definitely enjoyed our time with CART. We've developed a lot of close relationships and friendships with those involved throughout the whole CART community, and we'll miss it equally.
During the race, numerous off-track incidents resulted in 8 cautions for 29 laps, causing the race to end at the 2-hour limit after only 76 of the scheduled 83 laps. However, the beneficiary of that was Max Pappas, who overcame a 24th place starting position to notch his second win of the season.
First of all, you know, we never really got a great handling on it, on the setup of the car, but you know, I guess everybody was struggling out there in the race as well, you know, because in the last, 8 laps, you know, I pulled a little bit away from the rest of the field, and I knew that when they took me out there, and I first started to gain, I was 15, and after, you know, we went 8, I said, you know, this is a good day, because these things, they don't happen, you know, by chance. And I was always attacking, you know. I had pressure from Mimo, I had, you know, pressure from Michael. And I saw Helio going by me once, and he had a very strong pace. But as I said, you know, I focus on my own game. And you can only drive, you know, at the limit of the things of the car you have in your hand. And I took the best out of it, and the team took the best out of themselves. And what they did today is something very special, because, you know, of course, one deal is, you know, being in a situation like, you know, Gilles has been in the last races, you know, where you're always there in the front, you're always succeeding, you're always, you know, winning. And one deal is being one day last, one day first, one day last, one day first. And it kind of, you know, wear you out, especially the guys. But I'm very proud of everybody at Team Rail, because this win comes, as I said, because everybody believed in it.
Memo Gidley also overcame adversity as a pit fire erupted during his first scheduled pit stop. However, Gidley and his crew recovered to score his second straight podium result, finishing second.
Well, considering all the bad luck I've had in the past, I think a little good luck is definitely deserving, not only for me, but for my team. And, you know, this is very competitive out here, and sometimes, you know, you win by starting at the front, and sometimes you win by, you know, persisting on at the back and making good calls, like my team did, and good pit stops, and getting good fuel economy. And you just never know what happens in a race. And I think that's been proven the last 2 races with me. So it's been a great result for Team Target, and I'm very proud to be here. And, you know, it was a great weekend.
Gilles DeFerrin soldiered home with what looked to be like the winning strategy for a full distance race. However, with championship rival Kenny Breck out of the race early on, DeFerrin is pleased with a third-place result.
Everything was looking good for us from the start. I mean, I could quite easily hold that position there and pull away slowly. And certainly even the call on the first stop to fill it up instead of short fill like Dixon did and all that. You know, I wasn't too sure at that point of the race because I was pushing really hard and really having a tough time to stay with Dixon and Helio. But certainly they had a lot less fuel in the car than I did, and I think that had a lot to do with that. And but you know, I think Roger's strategy was perfect, because when we came back into the pits again, I was able to leapfrog in front of everybody. And And he was very, very good. And going towards the end of the race, we thought, hey, we're looking good. And certainly, you know, the yellows and shortly in the race put pay to that. But you know, let's not take anything away from Max and Mimo, who at the end, I have to say, they were under tremendous pressure, and neither of them made a mistake. So. congratulations to you, my friend.
DeFerrin's third place finish also clinches Honda's fourth manufacturer's title in the last 6 years. Here's how they finished at the Honda Grand Prix of Monterey. It was Max Pappas over Mamo Gidley and Jill DeFerrin. Scott Dixon and Jimmy Vassar round out the top five. Then it was Elio Castroneves, Bruno Junqueira, Tony Kanaan, Christian Fittipaldi, and Adrian Fernandez through the top 10. 11th through 15th was Casey Mears, Brian Herta, Toru Takagi, Michael Andretti, and Alex Tagliani. 16th through 20th, Maurizio Grushelman, Oriol Servia, Paul Tracy, Dario Franchitti, and Cristiano D'Amata. 21 through 25, Shinji Nakano, Roberto Moreno, Michel Jourdain Jr., Max Wilson, and Kenny Breck. Rounding out the 26-car field was Patrick Carpentier. The time of the race, 2 hours, 0 minutes, 10.589 seconds for an average speed of 84.919 miles an hour. The margin of victory, 0.794 seconds. With only two races left in the season, Gilles DeFerrin leads Kenny Breck 179 to 153 points in the series championship hunt. Elio Castroneves remains the only other championship hopeful with 141. Next up for the FedEx Championship Series is the annual trip down under to Surfers Paradise in 2 weeks.
And joining us on the line now as Jim Murphy wraps up his Honda Champ Car update is our good friend John Evans. And John, Oval Express really getting to the busy stage of the season for you as the speedway racing really starts to hot up across the country.
Yes, Greg, we haven't even had an off-season, really, because the magazine's going really strongly. Very happy the way things are going. But, of course, not all insurance worries have been resolved with public liability. It's head-on into the speedway season.
That certainly has been a problem in the last few months. And, of course, with NASA, the main organising body of Speedway in this country, underwriting and doing a lot of the insurance negotiations for all the competitors and promoters, they have certainly, with the HIH collapse and a few other things going on in the world, had to really scrounge around in the last few months to get some new policies underwritten.
That's correct. It's been a fairly traumatic time because premiums, as you mentioned, have actually tripled in most instances. So at one stage, it was looking fairly bleak for a lot of people. But now that it's underway, there's a lot of renewed enthusiasm and optimism. And we're looking forward to a really strong series with World Series starting next month. And, of course, Parramatta getting underway last night.
Yes, they did get underway. It was a bit of a false start 2 weeks ago when it was rained out. And, of course, the weather just not playing into the new promoter there, Mike Raymond's hands.
Yeah, unfortunately, Speedway, as we know, is one of those sports where you're just totally in the hands of the elements. But I'm sure things will get underway quickly now. Things will really be on an upward swing.
Of course, for Spring Car fans, certainly and Speedway fans in general, Oval Express is probably the best read in the country. The monthly publication has, what, I think 18 months now you've been going.
We just celebrated our 12-month anniversary, just putting out another issue going to bed this week, which will go on sale the first Wednesday of November, and there's lots to look forward to in that particular publication as well. We've just wrapped up a big article on super sedans and late models, lots of interesting reading, and, of course, our columnists who are really what a lot of people are the first thing that they read in the magazine.
And, of course, with the World of Outlaws Championship getting towards the pointy end, you're certainly letting everyone know how the standings are shaping up.
Yeah, we concentrate more on features in our magazine, so we're more, rather than being race-orientated, we actually prefer to go behind the scenes and just educate people into the personalities, the places, the businesses, etc. within the sport. So there's lots of interesting reading in Oval Express.
Mm. And, of course, with the racing almost, almost across the country getting underway now and the World Series starting over in the West, there is a lot of new look in Australian Speedway. As I mentioned, Mike Raymond in at Parramatta, and of course the changes over at the World Series with John Hughes stepping down and Dave Lander coming into that role.
Yeah, well, I won't preempt the announcement, but there's some really exciting information to be forthcoming from the new owners of World Series about national free-to-air television coverage and exciting new sponsorships. So all these things are something to look forward to breaking in the next couple of weeks, Craig.
Well, in fact, they're supposed to be breaking tomorrow.
Exactly right.
Not a couple of weeks, because I know you've got a deadline you're working to as well.
That's correct.
But
it is exciting what potentially is going to happen this coming season.
And it has been a long time overdue, because certainly Speedway and drag racing, two of the largest spectator motorsports in the country, have certainly been on the back foot for professional coverage and professional promotion working together at a national level. Of course, Andrew has always been there for the drag racing fans, but certainly Speedway has never had a body like that that has been all-inclusive.
Yeah, well, it's really interesting now that when you actually take someone to their first Speedway meeting, one of the very first things they notice is how much a family-orientated sport it is, with the appeal and widespread range of young to old audiences, and I'm sure this new sponsorship and television deal will go a long way towards educating the public who don't normally have the opportunity to go to Speedway to see that.
And of course, with Oval Express being able to catch up with all the regular features in the backroom movements, and also driver profiles right across the whole gamut of Speedway, because a lot of people think of Speedway, some who are from England think it's bikes, and other people from America think it's sprint cars, but of course here in Australia it's so much more than that.
That's correct. We've got a fairly diverse range of people from those involved from a mechanical background to people who are just profiled like an accountant in Mount Gambier. So it really is a very broad appeal to a lot of different people, and that's got a lot to do with the popularity, because it's short, sharp, interesting, all over in one night. Everything unfolds in front of you.
And of course, John, for the people who want to go out, get their copy of Oval Express now. It's in most major news agencies across Australia. Perhaps to make it easier for them, what's on the cover of the current edition?
The current edition features a late model and a super sedan from courtesy of Ian Botcher in Queensland, and in 2 weeks' time the new cover will be Max Dumsey's new war paint on his new Valvoline Maxim, getting ready for World Series.
Yeah, it is going to be an exciting World Series this year with all the developments that are going on. And, of course, probably one thing that race fans here in the ACT will be happy to know about is Triple S will be providing coverage of most of the World Series sprint car events here on Sunday Morning Sport, where we'll have replays of the events throughout the week.
Yep, that'll be fantastic, because once it starts cranking up, I'm sure there'll be lots of action unfolding, with three Americans taking on probably the three strongest Australians in reigning champion Brooke Tatnall and former champions Max Dumsey and Skip Jackson.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Skip was certainly not having the year he wanted to have last year, and this year he is coming back on a mission.
Yeah, Skip's fairly much intent now, as Australia won, to have a successful season here. He's going to be provided with the best equipment possible, but I think really the one to look out for is Shots, because he did sit on the pole for the last August Amoco Knoxville Nationals, and I think he'll be very much a determined person to try and become the first American to win the World Series.
It is going to be an exciting year, and of course Oval Express will keep you in touch with all the news. And I know you're developing a website, so just before we wrap it up, how has that development gone, and is it now available to people on the World Wide Web?
Yeah, we're not far away. People can email us at www.overexpress.com, and it won't be long before we have it up and running. So that's something else to look forward to.
Well, John, thanks for your time. Of course, Oval Express in news agencies, as I said, most major news agencies, and if it's not in your news agency now, we'll certainly want to ask your news agent to provide it for you.
Most definitely. Like we say, Craig, it's available at all good news agents, and perhaps some bad ones too.
John Evans, thanks for joining us. That's all we've got time for tonight on Inside Motorsport. Until next week, we'll with the Honda Indy news, of course, dominating the press, we'll certainly be back with the Honda Indy show.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of Triple S FM Canberra via Comrade Sat, with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.